The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Upgrade your summer cookouts with Gourmet Omaha Steaks. They offer a huge menu of steaks and more. All high-quality ingredients, and every purchase is backed by Omaha Steaks' 100% unconditional guarantee. Right now, you can get this limited-time deal, an exclusive savings of 80% on a very special combo, the Summer Sensation. You get all of this. 2 5-ounce filet mignons, 2 5-ounce top sirloins, 4 4-ounce boneless pork chops, 4 3.5-ounce chicken fried steaks, a 12-ounce package of all beef meatballs, 4 4-ounce Omaha steak burgers, 4 4-ounce gourmet jumbo franks, a 16-ounce package of Omaha steakhouse fries, 4 caramel apple tartlets, an Omaha steak seasoning packet, plus 4 more Omaha steak burgers. This exclusive package is only $49.99. Go to omahasteaks.com, type FTN in the search bar, and add the Summer Sensation to your cart. Again, visit omahasteaks.com and enter code FTN in the search bar to get this great package for $49.99.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. The president defends his eldest son.
My son is a wonderful young man.
Plus, VA Secretary David Chokin on cleaning up the department.
Almost 800 employees have either been fired, suspended greater than 14 days, or demoted from their positions.
Later, a new tool to spot fake news.
It pulls in hundreds of thousands of links every day and measures the ones that are gaining likes at the fastest rate.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. After a Bastille Day military parade and celebration in Paris, the President and First Lady departed for the U.S., spending the weekend at his club in Bedminster, New Jersey. Mr. Trump's trip, though, was overshadowed by news about his eldest son, Don Jr.'s, meeting with a Russian lawyer last year after promises of incriminating information on Hillary Clinton. The president defended him alongside French President Emmanuel Macron at a news conference Thursday.
My son is a wonderful young man. He took a meeting with a Russian lawyer, not a government lawyer, but a Russian lawyer. It was a short meeting. It was a meeting that went very, very quickly, very fast.
President Trump described the meeting as opposition research. But we also learned Friday a Russian-American lobbyist says he was also at that meeting. He reportedly has ties with Russian intelligence agencies, but denied to the Associated Press he was ever formally trained as a spy. Despite that distraction, the White House hailed the Paris trip as a success. Let's talk now with CBS's Elaine Cobb. She's in Paris on Skype. Elaine, Mr. Trump has few friends left in Europe. What opportunity does Macron offer him?
President Macron will offer President Trump an in Europe, this chance to keep the dialogue open with the European Union despite their differences. And I think it's something that is of advantage to both men, and clearly something President Macron wants to build on. He's said he would like to be the person to stop Donald Trump becoming isolated, that he wants President Trump to be kept within the loop, to stay within the international dialogue on so many of the issues affecting the international community.
You mentioned the international dialogue. They're split, though, between the U.S. and France and other countries around the world on the Paris Climate Accord. What do we hear about that?
They did say we disagree, and President Macron said, but it's important that we continue to talk about it. Interestingly, President Trump said we do disagree on it, but maybe something might happen with respect to the Paris Accord. We'll see what happens. And if it happens, that will be wonderful, he said. And he also said if it doesn't happen, well, that's OK, too.
President Trump, Elaine, also praised the relationship between the U.S. and France going back centuries. And he marked the centennial of the U.S. entering World War One, while also singling out threats from rogue countries like Iran, North Korea, and of course, Syria. What kind of relationship do you think we'll have with the French in countering terrorism and rogue countries around the world?
Countering terrorism is a huge issue for France because, of course, it's been hit so badly by ISIS-led or ISIS-inspired attacks over the past 2 years. France is a strong player on Syria, and that's not going to change. Both leaders stressed that it's very important to keep moving forward with northern Iraq and with Syria. They stressed that they want a roadmap, not just for now, but also for the future, to build in stability. So there seemed to be a lot of agreement between the two. And President Trump said that he felt President Macron was going to be very tough on people who broke the law or who threatened France. And that is something we know he admires. So very much both of them with the same message.
CBS's Elaine Cobb in Paris. Thanks for talking with us, Elaine.
You're welcome.
The White House this weekend is also pushing for Republicans in the Senate to get behind a new bill to reform health care. More from CBS's Nancy Cordes.
We urge every member of the United States Senate to roll their sleeves up and get this bill to the president's desk and get it there soon.
The White House announced its support for the party's new health care bill, even as some GOP senators held back.
How do you feel about the bill, Senator?
Maine Senator Susan Collins said she will vote no. So did Kentucky's Rand Paul.
Do you think the new version is better than the old version?
No, I think it's worse. I mean, the old version repealed most of the Obamacare taxes. This repeals about half the Obamacare taxes.
The bill uses that tax revenue to pay for opioid addiction treatments, and it puts an additional $70 billion into a fund to stabilize premiums on the individual market. But it does not roll back the deep Medicaid cuts in the first version, a key sticking point for at least half a dozen moderates.
We haven't come to a decision at this point.
The only holdout who has gone from no to yes so far is Texas conservative Ted Cruz. The new bill includes his proposal to let insurers offer cheaper plans with fewer benefits.
I think we've made very significant progress expanding choices, expanding options, expanding competition, and reducing premiums.
But his backing won't be enough to keep the bill alive. And that has even supporters of the bill, like Lindsey Graham, casting about for alternatives.
Everybody is looking for an idea that is more Republican and does not run into the concept you're taking money from poor people to give it to rich people.
Nancy Cordes reporting from Capitol Hill. A lawyer for a man involved in the case of four young men who went missing in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, says his client confessed to killing them. More from correspondent DeMarco Morgan.
Anything to say? Even a sympathy? Even you're sorry?
I'm sorry.
That apology was all Cosmo DiNardo said to reporters as he was led away in handcuffs. Paul Lang, one of DiNardo's defense attorneys, said his client was much more forthcoming with prosecutors.
He confessed to his participation or commission in the murders of the four young men. In exchange for that confession, Mr. DiNardo was promised by the district attorney that he will spare his life by not invoking the death penalty.
An anonymous source with firsthand knowledge of the confession told the Associated Press DiNardo sold marijuana to the victim, but he felt cheated or threatened during the transactions. The source said the men were killed separately and a co-conspirator was involved in three of the killings.
Did he act alone?
I can't answer that.
Text messages show DiNardo had been part of a group chat set up by friends of the missing men. When asked if he was worried about his buddy Dean Finocchiaro, DiNardo called him a pill-popping junkie who probably just jumped parole. Those messages, as well as Snapchat photos of DiNardo posing with a revolver, were first reported by Philly.com. Bucks County District Attorney Matthew Weintraub.
I know more than I'm sharing on the relationships, and I have to keep it that way.
On Facebook, Finocchiaro's aunt Tina wrote, "I am completely crushed, heartbroken, and numb." Daniel Balbuena worked with Finocchiaro.
I'm going to miss him. You know, I feel bad. I just want to be strong for him because he was a strong kid, you know.
DeMarco Morgan reporting. Still to come, reforming the VA.
We've adopted a zero tolerance policy.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Lawmakers in Congress have reached an initial bipartisan deal to reform the post-9/11 GI Bill. It would remove a 15-year time limit to tap into benefits and boost money for thousands in the National Guard and Reserve. It's part of efforts to improve how the country treats its vets. Correspondent Cammy McCormick spoke with VA Secretary David Shulkin to discuss what he's doing.
The Department of Veterans Affairs embarking on the largest transformation and modernization effort in recent history. The VA's tackling head-on a lot of issues that have lingered for years. Let's start with the accountability and transparency issue, making it easier to fire employees and making that information public. How many VA employees and officials have been fired so far for misconduct?
Well, we've started to publish the disciplinary actions that we're taking against our employees so everyone can see this. Almost 800 employees have either been fired, suspended greater than 14 days, or demoted from their positions.
Are there? Can you? Is there a trend here in what the offenses are? I read just recently that drug theft by VA employees is a problem.
Well, drug diversion is a problem in every healthcare system across the country. It's something that we're very concerned about, particularly with the abuse of narcotics. And so we've adopted a zero tolerance policy. If you are found to have been taking drugs inappropriately or diverting drugs, you will no longer be working at the VA.
So what did a lot of these other offenses involve?
Well, they really involve deviations from our accepted standards. So they can either be professional issues, they could be violations of law, policy violations that are significant, repeated failure to perform your job duties.
Losing 800 people, are you able to find the right people to fill these positions now?
Well, of course, for us, accountability is not just firing employees or removing employees, but it's actually making sure that we get the right employees in the right positions. And so we need to approach this from both ends of the spectrum, being able to hire appropriately and quickly, as well as being able to remove employees when it's appropriate.
And the Act Protecting Whistleblowers, how many have come forward? Has that had a significant impact so far?
We do see a significant rise in the amount of employees who feel safe enough to be able to come and tell us when there are problems. We want to make sure that people know that when they do see issues, that they can raise concerns and not have any retaliation against them. And so we've worked hard to do that. We also want to make sure that when people do raise issues, that they are appropriate issues, because we're seeing a lot of people raise issues really as a way just to avoid them performing their own job duties.
The Veterans Choice Program that allows veterans to go to private community providers. There has been some criticism of this program by some veterans who say it's a false choice and it adds layers of bureaucracy and cost without actually improving care. And from the doctors themselves who say the VA has been slow to pay them because the VA is still the primary coordinator of benefits for this program. What's being done to correct those problems?
Well, I think all those criticisms are fair criticisms. This has been a very complex program to administer. It was brought into legislation by Congress very quickly in response to the wait time issues in 2014, but it was designed as a government program that had many rules and levels to it. And so what we've been working with Congress right now is to make sure that we can get veterans the choice that they deserve in the community without all of the complexity, so that there is a single source of money that we can pay for this instead of the current eight different sources of money that we have to pay for this, that veterans have a much easier time without those layers, and that we can pay our providers in a quick and expedited way because they deserve to be paid when they deliver these services.
When you're talking about seriously injured veterans from combat, are they able to find the care that they would need at private community facilities? I'm talking about traumatic brain injury, PTSD, prosthetics, orthotics, spinal injuries. Is that something the VA hopes to improve itself? Because it seems like, especially in small-town America, those services would be very difficult to find.
Well, this is the reason why I believe so strongly that we need a strong VA and that VA is essential for the national security of this country. The services that you've described, like traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress and orthotics and blind rehabilitation, are not readily available in many parts of this country, and it is the reason why VA needs to exist and to strengthen its services. And so I am committed as Secretary to invest more of our resources into those services that veterans really do need to rely upon. And when we send our men and women off to defend this country and to enter conflict, we have a responsibility to make sure when they return that they have world-class services like the ones that you talked about.
I've talked to some veteran amputees who say they live in smaller towns and there's not a prosthesis that's available to see them when they need to be seen. So many of them come back to Walter Reed here in the nation's capital or some of the other major military hospitals that deal with prosthetics. But how difficult a problem is that when you're talking about veterans who live in these small towns to find these qualified people?
It is a problem. It's not only a problem for the VA, it's a problem for all of American healthcare that there's so many parts of this country where there is a healthcare professional shortage. But for the VA in particular, rural medicine is really critical because, as you may know, many veterans, when they return from conflict, prefer to live in rural areas. So 40% of veterans live in rural areas. And so we are looking for new ways to get them the services that they need. And one of those areas is telemedicine. And so we actually have prosthetics professionals available to rural veterans through telemedicine. And that's how we try to address that need.
So let's go back to some of the problems that have been around for several years now. What are the wait times at this point at VA facilities, and how's the VA complaints hotline going?
Well, in terms of wait times, of course, that is our major focus, to make sure that no veteran is waiting for care and is harmed during that wait. So we've established same-day services for primary care and mental health in every single one of our VA medical centers across the country. We've also published our wait times on the internet for everybody to see what those wait times are so veterans can make the right choices for their own health care, because we believe strongly that veterans must be in charge of their own health care. And there is no other health care system in the country that is publishing its wait times. So we have areas that the wait times are longer than we want them to be, particularly in areas where there are shortages of healthcare professionals, but we're being open and transparent about those problems.
Dr. David Shulkin, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Up next, a new way to spot fake news on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
When you don't have a big marketing budget, you have to wait until the opportunity is just right. Well, consider this your opportunity alarm going off. Vistaprint's semi-annual sale has arrived with up to 50% off site-wide, including custom t-shirts, postcards, and even our new A-frame signs. And if you've been waiting for our newest business card options like square cards, now's the time to get huge savings on them too. Make the most of this opportunity. Go to Vistaprint.com by July 25th and enter the promo code SAVEBIG.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. We've been hearing a lot about fake news lately, especially from President Trump himself when he's attacking news organizations, especially on Twitter. Now, there's an online service that aims to do the work to find what is real news and what is fake news. Martin Schenk is joining us by Skype from near Brussels in Belgium, and he runs a website called Trendalyzer. Thanks for talking with us, Martin.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Tell me what you think fake news really is.
Fake news is basically anything that's not true and that people are presenting as news. So it can be anything. It can have different motivations. So there are people that are spreading fake news for political purposes. And that's basically propaganda or disinformation. But there are also people that are spreading fake news for financial reasons.
How does Trendalyzer work then?
Trendalyzer is an engine that collects information about what's trending on the internet. So it pulls in hundreds of thousands of links every day and measures the ones that are gaining likes at the fastest rate. So it can be used for more than just finding fake news. But since the U.S. presidential election in the primaries, we started systematically adding fake news websites to lists of sources in Trendalyzer. And then we started looking at which articles from these sites are gaining likes at the fastest rate. And that way, we can very often spot new fake news that's gaining traction, and we're often 24 hours ahead of other fact-checking websites. So that allows us to react to that very quickly. We have a website called leadstories.com, where we then post articles debunking the fake news by pointing out that the photo used with the article, for example, is 5 years old, or that a spokesperson doesn't exist, or various other hints, because very often fake news websites have a disclaimer on their site. It's well hidden on another page that says, everything you read on this site is not true, it's satire, don't sue us. If you point that out, then you don't even need to research all the facts thoroughly, because they're saying themselves that it's fake.
And why did you choose to create Trendalyzer?
It's basically a hobby project that got out of hand. So I'm a big fan of the website reddit.com, where people can submit links and then everybody can upvote or downvote them. And I was curious to see or to try and predict what was going to be on the front page of Reddit. So I took the list of links that were being added to Reddit, and I started checking Facebook to see which ones were gaining likes the fastest. And I wrote a little script to automate that. And then it hit me. Hey, I wrote something here that says which links are trending or the most trending. So when one thing led to another, and now it's an engine that's doing 300,000 to 400,000 links a day. It constantly brings up interesting stuff that I hadn't seen before.
Martin Schenk, creator of Trendalyzer, speaking to us from near Brussels in Belgium. Thanks, Martin.
Yeah, thank you.
Experts say more people are falling victim to scams on Facebook. More from correspondent Anna Warner.
I wouldn't wish this on an enemy.
That's Shelley Drummond's reaction to what happened to her on Facebook. It started when she found the profile for a friend from years back named Deborah Boyd.
I was on Messenger, and my friend's name came up.
Soon, her friend Boyd was telling her about a so-called government grant she'd gotten through an agent on Facebook. Sure enough, the agent then told Drummond she could get financial assistance from the government. All she had to do was provide some personal information, then send $1,500 in fees to get up to $100,000 in grant money.
The person that I was corresponding with that I thought was my friend had vouched for this foundation, and I believed her.
So Drummond wired the $1,500 to Florida, then waited for the delivery driver, like the one shown on Facebook, to deliver her $100,000 in cash. But
they never came.
And when she tracked down her friend Boyd by phone,
I said, Shelly, it wasn't me. You got scammed.
Turns out Boyd's Facebook account had been hacked by scammers who locked her out, then quickly reached out to try to con her family and friends, who she then had to warn.
Please do not send them anything and delete yourself off that page because it's not me.
Emma Fletcher is with the Better Business Bureau.
They're basically capturing that trust you have in this person and using it for their own gain.
So we wondered, were the scammers still active? To find out, we set up our own fake account on Facebook and contacted Boyd's imposter. Sure enough, she claimed she got a $50,000 grant and said we could get one too. It wasn't a loan, and we wouldn't have to pay it back.
She's not wasting any time.
Something we showed Fletcher as the conversation progressed.
Is that typical of what you see happening?
Well, once you show an interest, you know, they're going to go in for the kill.
And it wasn't just the fake Deborah Boyd account. We found what appears to be a network of fake Facebook profiles offering grants from $50,000 to $1 million, all while assuring us it wasn't a scam. Swear to God, one said. But those photos of the agents? A quick search using Google Images turned up the truth. The photos are real, but those people don't offer grants. One is a real estate agent from Vermont. The other, a professor at MIT. So if those aren't the real people, who's really running those Facebook accounts?
What this website is a IP tracker.
Meet computer expert Gary Malefsky. He set up a way to track the scammer's location. He built this page that looks like a money transfer company's website, but really finds a computer's unique identifier and location.
So when they click the link, thinking they're going to a popular money transfer website, they're allowing us to track them.
We got the scammers to click on it, and lo and behold...
So there we are. Now we're in Lagos, Nigeria.
That's right. Those scammers are in Nigeria.
Russians use malware. The Chinese use malware. The Nigerians, they use social engineering, and they use social media.
But if we were able to track them, what about Facebook? The company told us it has a dedicated team helping to detect and block these kinds of scams and has developed several techniques to stop the abuse. But Boyd told us Facebook still hasn't solved her problem, and the scammers still have a fake profile up with her name.
These people should not still be contacting my friends and family. No way should they be. This is what, 6 months later, 9 months later? Come on.
Well, after we reached out to Facebook and provided them with the URLs for those scam accounts, it appears they did block those accounts. But Deborah Boyd tells us she's never been able to get back into her old account, which has a lot of family photos and memories she'd like to have back.
Anna Warner reporting. Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, how the travel ban is affecting pets.
This is the little Iranian rescue.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS Radio News. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Now a story about man's best friend and the Trump administration's travel ban. That ban, of course, doesn't specify that animals or pets from the countries affected are prohibited from entering the U.S., but it can complicate things, as CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman found out. He spoke with a woman known as the Pug Queen for her efforts in saving abused and abandoned dogs.
Bringing a dog into the U.S. from a foreign country can be a daunting task under any circumstance. But what about if the dog is from Iran, while federal courts are considering the Trump administration's travel ban?
There was just no way for him to survive over there. You know, he is abused. He was abandoned on the side of the road. No one wanted to take care of him. They thought he was a burden.
It was on February 1st that Isabella St. James first heard about an abused young puppy, a pug, in Tehran.
The way he was physically, he wouldn't have survived. I mean, it was a life-threatening injury he had.
Just 5 days earlier, though.
We want to ensure that we are not admitting into our country the very threats our soldiers are fighting overseas.
President Trump signed his initial travel ban. The 41-year-old St. James, who was born in Poland, is a U.S. law school graduate, is a former Playboy bunny, and the former girlfriend of Playboy founder Hugh Hefner, was worried.
This is happening all during the difficulties of the travel ban. Can you go to Iran back?
Yes, exactly. Couldn't have happened at a more intimidating time, and I definitely had my doubts and questioned myself.
Then the travel ban was put on hold, but there were other complications which took months. After figuring out all the nooks and crannies, St. James was ready to make the attempt. Finally, on Memorial Day, just weeks before portions of the ban were reinstated, it happened.
We couldn't find a volunteer. No one wanted to help this little guy from over there. So fortunately, I had an Iranian lady who was able and willing to fly there for 4 hours and fly back and grab him.
Now the dog named Chance is in the U.S.
And this is Chancey. This is the little Iranian rescue.
This is the dog from Iran.
Yes, this is the dog from Iran. Yes, this is Chance.
Isabella St. James, who is known in the pug world as the Pug Queen, has even learned a few words in Farsi.
Salam. Salam. Chancey.
So you learned a bit of...
Yes, I learned a couple of words in Farsi so I can get him excited. And he does. His ears seem to perk up.
He does react to it.
Mm-hmm. He does react to it, yeah.
And among pug lovers, Chance has become a celebrity.
We had somebody, when we were walking over in the little plaza, that mentioned Chance.
How did he know about Chance?
From the news.
Chance, who is now a year old but is the size of a four-month-old pug, has had surgery to repair his damaged back. He is still learning to walk again. The prognosis is good. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
A court commissioner in L.A. has granted a temporary restraining order against Rob Kardashian in response to the reality television star's posting of explicit nude photos of his ex-fiancée, Blac Chyna, on social media last week.
I would like to first and foremost thank the judge for granting me this restraining order to protect me.
Kardashian's attorney says he's sorry he shared those naked photos. Lisa Bloom is the attorney representing Blac Chyna. First, Lisa, what's your reaction to the temporary restraining order against her ex-fiancé?
Well, we are delighted that we had a complete and total victory in court yesterday. We worked all the end of last week and all weekend on it. So we worked very hard to put together all of the law and all of the facts for the court in support of our temporary restraining order, and we got everything that we wanted.
Blac Chyna claims that Rob hit her in the thigh earlier this year. How come she never filed charges when that happened? Is Rob abusive?
Well, for the same reason that the vast majority of domestic violence victims don't file charges, because they hope it's a one-time incident. They believe the perpetrator when they apologize and say it's never going to happen again. When you add that this is a very high-profile couple, she didn't want this to be all over the news and all over the media. So she didn't report it, but she did take pictures of the broken hinge on the door that she says he broke down to try to get to her.
You represent, Lisa, a number of other high-profile clients, many women, including Kathy Griffin, who was at the center of her own public struggle after posing for a picture, as you know, holding the decapitated head of President Trump. She apologized for that. What's next for her?
I think Kathy is taking a break right now and sort of regrouping. So that's really all I can say about her. There haven't been any criminal charges filed against her, of course, because what she did was not a crime. And we explained at our press conference that was her attempt to sort of mock President Trump for what he said about blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever. Unfortunately, as soon as she posted it, she realized it could be seen differently, and she was very much appalled and upset and apologized and took it down. But then the Trump family came after her and demanded that she get fired from jobs, and they were really quite vicious towards her.
How do you think gender is a factor in the public spotlight, whether it's in Hollywood or Washington?
Well, gender, unfortunately, is a very common factor. You know, what Kathy Griffin did is something that many male comedians and artists have done over the years, and yet the level of hate and vitriol on the Trump family coming after her was completely different than what the others experienced. You know, with regard to my revenge porn cases like Blac Chyna and my client Misha Barton, it's a very gendered kind of attack. To take an intimate image of a woman and post it online, and 90% of victims of revenge porn are women. We still live in a culture that slut shames women, something we explained in our brief to the court. You know, the idea that a woman has ever been sexually active or dressed provocatively or sets a picture to a boyfriend or a husband, you know, is used against her. As if there's no difference between sending a picture to an intimate partner and posting it online for the entire world to see. So I know that I still have a lot of work to do. All of us who believe in women's rights still have a lot of work to do so that women who are single and who choose to be sexually active or sexually provocative still have their legal rights enforced.
What has to change, though? Should there be more policing of social media content? Should there be harsher laws protecting against that?
Well, you know what? We have pretty good laws. And in my law practice, the Bloom Firm, we fight for women every day. We just had a court victory in a sexual harassment case this morning. What it really takes is women standing up for their rights and saying, no, that's enough. I've had it. You know, most women are sexually harassed at some point in their lives. Many of us are victims of domestic violence. Many of us just shrug it off as if it's just a fact of life. It's not a fact of life. And I find that when women stand up for their rights, not only do they become empowered, but it has a ripple effect and others stand with them. And that's one of the big reasons why Blac Chyna decided to do this, because she wanted other women to know, this is not okay. This is not acceptable. Stand up for yourself. And by the way, in the case of revenge porn, if it's considered domestic violence, as it is in California, you don't even have to have a lawyer. You can go down to court all on your own, fill out the form, go before a judge, and you can get help for free. And you should, because we should all stand up for our rights.
Attorney Lisa Bloom, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Coming up, how Visa's encouraging more businesses to go cashless on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS
CBS Radio News podcasts are now on Spotify. Listen to great programs like Face the Nation, the CBS News Weekend Roundup, CBS This Morning, and more. They're all on your Spotify app using your iOS or Android device. CBS Radio News on Spotify, the leading global music streaming service, now lets you find the right podcast for every moment. Open Spotify to listen to CBS Radio News podcasts today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Parts of the Midwest are drying out and cleaning up after storms dumped several inches of rain, flooding towns. More from correspondent David Begno in Findlay, Ohio.
The torrential rain was relentless and areas already covered in water. A view from above central Ohio shows the widespread damage there. A carnival, a high school football field, and several homes were immersed under inches of water.
It just wouldn't stop. You know, you just keep saying, oh, please, just stop, stop.
One person had to be rescued after rushing water swept their vehicle away. In nearby Hebron, the heavy rain forced dozens of people to evacuate this mobile home park. First responders used boats to get them out.
It's flooded before, but nothing this severe. This is totally incredible.
And in Findlay, several city streets are closed because of high water. Some cars were left stranded. To the northwest, in Wisconsin, the Fox River reached record levels, cresting at more than 17 feet. That is 2 feet above the highest level recorded. House Speaker Paul Ryan returned to his home state to tour the areas devastated by the storm.
This happened so fast. It really, really happened so fast that so many people were caught off guard. So it's a real blessing that we did not have the kind of loss of life or injury that could have happened.
Yeah, second time we've done this in almost 7 years.
For some people in Lincolnshire, just north of Chicago, paddling was about the only way home.
We're going to pray that this is it. This is as high as it goes. Nobody else needs more water. It's done enough damage.
David Begno reporting. An American doctor has agreed to travel to the UK to examine a critically ill baby as his parents fight to bring him to the U.S. for experimental treatment.
A New York neurology expert, Professor Michio Hirano of Columbia University Medical Center, is coming to London Monday to assess whether 11-month-old Charlie Gard should be given an experimental treatment in the U.S. that might save his life or be taken off life support, as his London hospital insists. The judge says it'll be at least 10 days before a full hearing on Charlie's fate. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Listen up, especially if you've got kids. A new report is raising questions about chemicals found in foods, particularly the cheese powder used in some macaroni and cheese products.
The report, funded by four advocacy groups, says common chemicals known as phthalates are found in some macaroni and cheese and other cheese products.
The findings are not surprising or inconsistent with, unfortunately, increasing literature that has documented phthalates easily getting into and staying in, especially dairy products.
Phthalates are chemicals used to make plastics soft and can get into food during packaging and processing. They can disrupt the hormones in the body and could affect the developing brains of children. Dr. Leonardo Trasande at NYU Langone Medical Center says his research has shown a link between phthalates and increases in blood pressure and resistance to insulin in children. While it's difficult to avoid phthalates, Dr. Trasande says simple steps can reduce your exposure.
Eating fresh fruits and vegetables in particular is a great way to avoid contact with the food packaging in the first place.
Experts say don't microwave in plastic. The heat can cause the chemical to seep into your food. Also, don't use the dishwasher for plastics. Glass and stainless steel containers are good alternatives for storage. And if a plastic container is scratched or damaged, it's best to toss it. Don Champion, CBS News, Dallas.
Visa wants more restaurants and food vendors to go cashless. It's offering 50 of them an award of up to $10,000 each to help upgrade their payment technology if they commit to ditching cash. CBS News financial contributor Melody Hobson talked about it on CBS This Morning.
For years, we've been talking about this trend to going cashless. Visa is finally doing it. Tell us more about this program.
So it's a very small program to start. It's 50 merchants. Now, keep in mind, they have something like
30 million merchants that use Visa around the world. So it's a small step, $500,000. But the idea is cash is their biggest competitor. Cash is still the number one way that we pay in this country, and it's growing around the world. So it's not MasterCard that they're worried about or Apple Pay. It's cash. They want to take some of that business away from cash.
So who benefits when we go cashless?
Certainly the credit card companies, the debit card companies, the banks. They absolutely benefit. Remember, every time we swipe, they get a piece of the action, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1% for them, more for American Express. Certainly the contactless networks like Apple Pay, Google Pay, because they're going to invest in those that technology for these businesses so they can accept those digital payment networks. And then at the end of the day, the merchant, you don't have to worry so much about theft. You're not worried about how you close out the cash register at the end of the day, taking the money to the bank at the end of the day. So all of those things go away. It saves a lot of time for the merchant.
You're not worried about physical theft, but you can be worried about digital theft.
Correct.
And other issues that come up with
cyber
this,
theft,
which remains a big concern.
Big issue and growing. The cyber criminals are getting better and better at what they do. And we just have to be very, very cognizant of that. We've read about these breaches, Target, Yahoo, the one with Verizon. So this is something that we've all gotten used to, and we have to understand they're getting more and more sophisticated.
And you just have to accept it as a way of life, and that every once in a while they're going to have to send me a new credit card because one's going to be breached, right?
I mean, well, let's hope it gets better at some point. I mean, we're so far behind Europe in what they've done with chip and pay. We have the chip piece. We haven't gotten the PIN piece done yet, which is the double two-factor authentication that really helps sort of cut down on this level of theft.
Financial contributor Melody Hobson talking with CBS This Morning. Scientists in Japan are developing a device that aims to detect dirty bombs. Officials hope to deploy it before the 2020 Summer Olympics in Tokyo.
Conventional X-ray baggage screening machines can't detect the presence of nuclear materials, so Japan is refining a device that uses neutron beams. It can identify even trace amounts of fissionable material hidden in luggage within a second. Authorities are concerned about preventing attacks using so-called dirty bombs, which are easy to assemble and can contaminate large areas. Lucy Kraft, CBS News, Tokyo.
And finally this week, in a tribute to a legendary CBS newsman who would have turned 100 Friday.
Douglas Edwards heard his calling on the radio.
March of 1938, what was the first World News Roundup, and I said, that's where I want to go. I want to join those guys.
Now here is Douglas Edwards with the CBS World News Roundup.
A voice of authority on the radio, Edwards was also the first network TV anchorman in 1948.
This was a 15-minute CBS news broadcast.
It eventually became the CBS Evening News, and it launched him on a 40-year run on television. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, autograph requests, home remedies, whatever, to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.